Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And good evening to you, Mr. Ben, and hi, everybody.
Hi, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. Lots to get through this evening. We'll start with what to see in the night sky, although not that we have much of a night sky this time of the year, which is good in many ways, of course, but if you're if you like to observe in particular deep sky objects, it's not the best time of the year, obviously, for it, because we don't have any astronomical light, but we'll get to that in a moment. But first, John,
yeah,
the planets.
Space station as well. We have three nights to go. It's only just seemed like it's just arrived in our evening skies over the last week or two, and now it's about to leave for another May, June, July, another month or so. So it's in our evening skies until May the 26th. It arrived in, of course, on the 13th. And again, if you want to put the date in the diary, July the 9th to July the 27th is when it appears back in the skies again. So that's the thing to look forward to. Now, I actually haven't.
I have tonight.
Oh, I did. I saw it once. By total accident, and that's because I always look up.
Mm-hmm. I do have tonight's time.
Uh-huh.
If it's clear, and it's clear here in Dublin at the moment. Beautiful evening, absolutely gorgeous. And yes, if you're out and about at 10:34 p.m. this evening, any time in any place in Ireland, I should say, around about that time, you will see the International Space Station move as usual from west to east. It'll be at a max altitude of 47 degrees up from the horizon and a magnitude of minus 3.3. So that's quite bright. You won't miss it. It goes across the sky at the same apparent speed as a high-flying aircraft, but you'll know it's not an aircraft because there's no flashing lights and it's much, much brighter.
It certainly is. Funny enough, last week there were three passes in the 24 hours. One was just after midnight, the other was another 90 minutes after that, and then again in the evening time again. So that was a most unusual one, I suppose. You get one, maybe two, every now and again, and that particular evening we got three, which was good fun as well. Now, Mercury, nothing has changed really since last week. Mercury is deep in the glow of sunrise, so not around for us to see. Venus, still pretty bright, minus 4.3. It's in Gemini just at the moment. And it's our brilliant evening star in the west from twilight into late evening. And it shines nearly as high as in the dusk as it gets ever. And it doesn't set till about 2 hours after dark, which is still a good chance to see it. So when does it get dark again?
I have the sunset time. Well, tomorrow's sunset is 9:34, but there's a long twilight. And actually, if you were out and about last night...
Mm-hmm.
You saw that you couldn't miss it. It was very close to the moon, the crescent moon. And so that bright object beside it, that was the planet Venus. You can't miss it. It's just so bright.
Yeah, it's pretty good. On the other side of that, Mars is dimming at the moment. It's only at magnitude 1.6. And it glows weakly to the upper left of Venus. So if you can see Venus just to the upper left, and they're getting the distance is shrinking. So they're getting closer, so they will pass each other out, or one will pass the other. Mars, through a telescope, is just a tiny blob at the moment. It's only 5 arc seconds in diameter, so don't be too disappointed. It will come back in a year and a half or 2 years' time again to really light up our skies again. Jupiter, minus 2.1, still bright. It's beginning to emerge from the bright glow of sunrise at the moment, so you look over to the east and you'll see that low in the east about 40 minutes after or before sunup, shall I say, and then it disappears quite quickly. Saturn is moderately low in the southeast before and during early dawn, so not brilliant to see that. Unfortunately, Uranus and Neptune are still too low in the east after before dawn begins. So nothing there to see. Mm. So Venus, Mars, and Jupiter, and a chance of seeing Saturn, but not really.
Yeah, well, you'd have to be up about 4:30 or so to see Jupiter, which not many of us are. But of course, we have a beautiful crescent moon at the moment. It's getting bigger. It will be. You'll see a bit more of the moon, of course, tonight than you would have seen last night, as we had as we're heading towards first quarter moon. Actually, first quarter moon will be next Saturday, the 27th. But at the moment, we have a 17% waxing crescent moon currently on view in the sky this evening. It will set just before 2 a.m. tomorrow morning, when we'll see about 2% more of it, and when it rises again tomorrow at 8:34 a.m., about 21% of it, of the face that faces towards us, will be on view, and it'll be juice out of us at 4:30 tomorrow evening, when it'll have creeped up to about 24%. And as I say, we're heading towards the first quarter, which of course by definition is 50% on Saturday the 27th. Now, we mentioned the long days and the short nights, and tomorrow morning in Dublin the sun will rise at 5:12 a.m., which is 10 minutes earlier than a week ago. Local noon is at 1:21 p.m. That's when the sun is due south or passes the meridian. And the sun will set at 9:34 p.m., which is 10 minutes later than a week ago. Of course, it doesn't get dark very quickly at this time of the year, because those twilights are getting longer and longer because the sun goes down at such a shallow angle. So from that time, 9:34 until 9:20, we'll have civil twilight. And from then until 11:30, we'll have nautical twilight. And then from 11:30, we have astronomical twilight. But that goes on all night until the nautical twilight begins again on Thursday at just after 3 a.m. So in other words, there's no astronomical night, not until the 30th of July. And of course, astronomical night is defined as when the sun is 18 degrees or more below the horizon. So if you're a deep sky object observer, then you won't see much, really. Oh, I got an alert the other day, now that I think of it, of I don't know whether you read about it, there's a supernova. Is it in M101?
101, yeah.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
No.
Where did you get your alert from?
Someone in I'm on a WhatsApp group in the Irish Astronomical Society.
Yes, that's good.
And I also get solar alerts for the potential aurora. Mm. And actually, there's a huge sunspot facing us right at the moment, many times larger than the Earth. Mm. I was going to say visible with the naked eye, but that's if you have your solar shades, your eclipse glasses, say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or the proper solar filters, you will see it. If you have a reasonably good eyesight, if your eyesight's a bit blurry like mine, it might be hard to see. But if you have the proper solar filters on your little 10x50s or 8x4, or your telescope, mm-hmm. you'll see it. Yeah, it's huge. And if it explodes while it's facing us, that'll be send out billions of tons of ionized particles, and we'll get huge aurora. So,
yeah, rip our atmosphere apart.
The electronics and some of the satellites that orbit the Earth. Yeah.
Funny enough, last week we had one monstrous sunspot that wasn't pointing really in our direction, was sort of side on, but it affected everything as well. So it's coming up to solar maximum just at the moment over the next couple of years. What is it, 2025?
It's about an 11-year cycle.
So what's going to happen when it gets to peak? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see, but they're fascinating to see, and the aurora are also, it's a spectacle to see as well. Now, we had a launch on Sunday.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, which is really exciting as well. So Axiom Space blasted off from the southern U.S. state of Florida on Sunday, carrying the first two Saudi astronauts to travel to the Orbiting Laboratory. So we've much excitement for them as well. Rihanna Barnawi, she was the first Saudi woman to voyage into space. And she was joined on the mission by fellow Saudi Ali Al-Karni. And he's a fighter pilot. And Rihanna's a cancer researcher. So it's anybody can go. You and I have a chance now if we could pass the test.
So mostly for engineers or somebody with science degrees or...
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Or more than... Well, you know, I think you need an MSc at minimum. I qualify in that, but I might be a bit too old.
Yeah, well, at this stage, Ash, when if Captain Kirk isn't too old at this stage...
Well, that's true too. Yeah. Well, yeah, he didn't have to do any work while he was up there for his 20 minutes, Mr. Shatner, yes. And, of course, you have to get on well with people because you can be cooked up with them for a long time.
Yeah.
That's me out.
Oh, no, I'd be all right. Yeah. You also mentioned Peggy Whitson.
Yes, she's gone.
That was very quiet. So she says, they've docked with the station at this stage, and she said, we're really excited to be here. And she went up three voyages in the past before this particular mission.
Yeah.
And it was great to launch a great ride. We had lots of fun on the way up and really excited to get a lot of work done up here is what she says. So it's just like getting on an aeroplane, you know. And
well, for her, maybe. She was a NASA astronaut. She made three trips in the past, as you mentioned there. So this is her fourth. But she's not a NASA astronaut now. She's with SpaceX.
Yeah, that's right. And,
they docked 16 hours after liftoff.
Yeah. And 2 hours after docking, the quartet entered the International Space Station, where they joined the seven astronauts. A lot of people up there at the moment. Three Russians, three Americans, and an Emirati already on board. So it's blasted off and went up the 400 kilometres to reach in 16 hours. So it's the mission that's named AX2. And it's the second fully private mission to visit the space station following the first in April 2022. So they're going to stay there for about 10 days and carry out some 20 experiments, whatever they will be.
Yep, but, 10 days, 20 experiments. They have their work scheduled, like all the astronauts up there. Their work is scheduled to the minute, and their downtime, and they spend 4 hours a day or thereabouts doing physical exercise to try to maintain body mass and muscle. Yep. So, as you mentioned, that was AX2, the second private mission, and the first one was launched, as you said, last April. And with the seats for three private astronauts, a company, an Axion employed astronaut, reported to cost $55 million each. That was an Axia Mission 1. And the cost for these seats has not been disclosed, but let's face it, it's not going to be less than $55 million.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032.
Now, is the US in a space race against China? Who knows this... because there's a lot of news covering the Chinese and the US, and it's become more common in news coverage. And, you know, is there a bit of competition between the three of them now, the Russians, the Americans, and the Chinese? And the Chinese certainly have made rapid advancements in space as evidence of an emerging landscape where China is directly competing with the US for supremacy. So it'll be interesting to watch this over the next coming years. And they call it, they call the current situation a race, and that implies that the US and China have roughly equal capabilities in space. But in several keys, the US is far ahead not only to China, but of any other spacefaring nations combined. So they're still well ahead, but China had a shuttly type thing up there for a long time, 180-something days, just brought it back down.
Secret mission, probably military. Very like the X-37 or whatever the Americans have, which is purely military, and they never say when it goes on those long unmanned flights. And we never get any information as to where it, I was going to say where it's going or how long it'll be there or what it's actually doing. I was going to say presumably reconnaissance, but they have a reconnaissance satellite, so who knows? Maybe one day we'll find out. If you do, we'll let you know here on the Astronomy Show here on Dublin City FM.
Yes, indeed. You just mentioned a moment ago about the powerful solar flares all over the place. So, to say one just erupted from the hidden spot. This is the one I was talking about last week, sparking widespread radio blackouts. And it doesn't have to be directly facing us, but they're saying that the sunspot was turning gradually to face us as well. So it's a big monster of a flare, solar flare. So we've just got to keep that and keep, I suppose, astronauts in as well, because a lot of radiation coming from that as well, and tons of radiation stuff coming from the surface of the sun. But we're well protected here with our little plus and minus and south poles and north poles and east and west and all that sort of thing as well. So that'll be interesting to see. But we have another couple of years, at least 2 to 3 years of big sunspots.
Okay, John, thank you very much. So, the Milky Way galaxy.
Yes.
We all have an image of them. We're told that it's a spiral galaxy, double spiral galaxy. It may not be exactly the same, the shape that we think it is?
Yeah, it's what we thought originally was it's just a particularly spiral, an even spiral. But the shape of the galaxy, with all the experiments they're doing with the new telescopes, with Hubble and James Webb, etc., and the shape of our galaxy may reveal a history of collisions with other galaxies or even galactic clusters. So do they gather in and stick around, or do they just go through and out the far side? Who knows? Andromeda's heading towards us, or should I say we're heading towards each other at 350,000 miles per hour. So in approximately 2 billion years, we're going to mix. But they're so large that the stars, there'll be very, very few collisions.
Gaps between the stars are huge. The chances of two stars actually colliding are fairly slim. It might happen, though.
So they've been increasingly discovering that galaxies have become irregular in shape. So I'm not talking just about our own Milky Way as well, but they're looking at the other ones that may be close as well, and the closest one being, of course, is Andromeda. But the traditional portrayal of the Milky Way is its four major bulges, I suppose. And I don't know whether many of you have seen the Milky Way at night in a good dark sky, but it's a super sight to see. If you look up really at Cassiopeia, it goes straight through that. And that's an easy way of finding it. So if you go out for about 20 minutes or so in a good dark sky, forget torches, lights, anything, just leave it completely dark. Your eyes will become adjusted to the darker sky, and you will get to see more and more stars, which is a great thing to see as well. And funny enough, what you would normally consider, I suppose, with the plough, you get to see a few more in there. Cassiopeia is sort of dotted with the extra stars as well. The Seven Sisters, if you get a pair of binoculars or something, it just turns into a big blanket of stars. So there are lots and lots of bits and pieces up there, but certainly if you can get a view of the Milky Way, and it goes from straight through Cassiopeia, just depending on what angle and what time of the year it is, straight through Cassiopeia and out the far side. So there's a big area of the darker part which we get to see as well, but it would be great to be in the desert somewhere like the Sahara to see a completely dark sky.
I think I may have told you this before. A couple of years ago, down staying with a few people down on farmland in Tipperary, Waterford direction. I went out, it was a beautiful clear night in winter. And there's just so many stars that I actually
couldn't recognize.
I was trying to, where's Cassiopeia? Well, of course, the Milky Way going straight through it, it was difficult to. Trying to find the plough, there's just so many stars that, you know, when we go out here at night and Dublin, our most suburban places, you can make out the constellations. So you know, that's the plough, and that way is north, and there's Orion or whatever. But there was just so many stars that I think it took me about 5 minutes. I eventually kind of figured something out, but it certainly wasn't obvious. There's just so many stars to be seen. And as you say, I've heard of people who've been out in deepest, darkest Africa, and they say it's amazing. People who wouldn't be necessarily usually be into the stars or observing, they found it absolutely amazing.
I think a trip to our planetarium up north is on the list.
Oh yes,
I was in the London one when I was only a little guy.
I was in there a few years ago in Greenwich.
That's it was fantastic to see, because the seats in there, and they might have changed since, because it could be almost 50 years something like that. So it's probably changed and increased a little bit better, and the projectors that throw it up the roof would be.
It's only 20 years since I was in it.
Yeah, well, we're not far away from the one in Armagh.
That's
true. We know people up there. Terry Mosley is one of them. And we can probably ask the question, or just arrive, or book. I think we should do it.
We should.
Yeah, just keep talking about
it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's go to the planetarium and see what happens. So,
yeah, they have plenty of always shows on at different times, and some specifically for kids, and you know, there's a choice. I think there's a few different shows on during the day, and make your choice, like going to the cinema. They're relatively short shows, well, I think about 20 minutes. And they've a good, when I was there last, a good display of models of certain satellites and like the International Space Station. And one of the first rovers on Mars, the Sojourner or something like that? It was absolutely tiny. It wasn't much bigger than a shoebox. I thought it was, going to be the size of a shopping trolley or something like that. Or a car, but it was really small.
So things have improved since. They're quite large now.
And they've an orrery. I find it very hard to say that word. And a logarithmic scale model of the solar system. Anyway, there's lots of good. Yeah, I'm sure if you Google Armagh Observatory and Planetarium, you will find out all the details.
Yeah, now, I just caught this one earlier on, and that NASA announced 8 winning teams and awarded $750,000 in prizes in the second phase of the agency's Deep Space Foods Challenge. And the winning teams will move on to compete in the third and final phase of the challenge. So, as NASA prepares to send astronauts farther into the solar system than ever before, food is going to be one of those things that's really important. And the agency needs food systems that can fortify future crews in deep space for years at a time. Maybe they should watch Alien or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because all you do is you press a button on the wall and out it comes, or a cup of tea or coffee or a rehydrated
drink. Yeah, so they shared $750,000 and to go on to, there's a chance to win $1.5 million in the final phases. Have you got some of the details there about some of them?
Yeah, there are quite a number of teams.
We won't go through them all. But
no, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different companies each receiving $150,000 each in prize funds from NASA and advanced to compete for the $1.5 million in total prizes from NASA in Phase 3. So one of the companies, Air Company of Brooklyn in New York, and they developed a system and processes for turning air, water, and electricity and yeast into food.
Mm-hmm. I like this one from a place in Florida, the Interstellar Lab.
Yeah.
They created a modular bioregenerative system for producing fresh microgreens, vegetables, mushrooms, and insects. Another one I like was a place actually in Finland, Solar Foods in Finland. They created a system that uses gas fermentation to produce single-cell proteins. So, begs the question where they get the gas from, basically, of course, you want to produce food quickly, easily, on a long-duration space mission like to Mars. And of course, when you get to Mars, you need food when you're there as well. So, and of course, saying this can help back here on Earth as well, that this technology could be used and modified to be used in places where there are, I suppose, food shortages.
So we have...
usually good spin-offs from all this space exploration and scientific endeavours.
Countries involved, Finland, Sweden, Australia, a few in, one in Boulder in Colorado, we've Florida, New York, Florida again, and there's one called Sated, which is a safe appliance, tidy, efficient, and delicious. And who thought of that one? So there we go. So that's what's happening at the moment. I'm not sure when all of these come to, well, I forgive the pun, to fruition. But it'll be interesting to watch. So I'm going to keep an eye on that just to see who gets down to the last in the phase three. And we're running rapidly out of time, unfortunately, Ben, but we've plenty of time for more.
Indeed. Yeah. Actually, I did want to talk about black holes because up to now, most of the black holes that have been discovered have been either relatively small, few solar masses, or absolutely humongous. But there have been studies done going back, looking at data over years and years from the Hubble Space Telescope, and they believe they have found a rare class of intermediate-sized black holes lurking at the heart of a globular cluster relatively close to Earth, a mere 6,000 light-years away. And they say this missing link between the small black holes and the absolutely huge one is weighs around 100 to 100,000 times the sun's mass. So, they want to do a lot more studies with that. These two candidates that they found reside on the outskirts of other galaxies, and each of these possible black holes has the mass of tens of thousands of suns and may have once been at the center of dwarf galaxies, but closer to home, they found a number of these intermediate black holes orbiting in our Milky Way in those globular clusters that orbit the Milky Way. And one of them seems to be in a globular cluster quite near an Omega Centauri, and for a number of reasons, including the need for more data, these and other intermediate black hole findings still remain inconclusive, but they don't rule out some other theories. But they've watched the motion of other stars going around what appears to be nothing. I mean, you've probably seen these time-lapse videos, I don't know whether you have or not, of stars, and you might see one, a video that lasts about 4 or 5 seconds, but it's actually filmed over maybe 11 or 20 years, and you can see these stars whizzing in towards nothing. Well, you can't see anything there because it is a black hole. But from the motion and the speed and the masses, you can do some calculations and figure out the mass of these black holes. And they're saying, oh, that's unusual. They're usually very small or very large. And the really large ones tends to be at the very center of galaxies.
Yeah. Just before we go, the NASA-funded Catalina Sky Survey is worth a look at the moment because they're looking for our help, as you, me, and everybody else who looks up into the sky. They've logged at this stage 32,000 different asteroids, but we need more eyes to help to find if there are any more that might be in the near-Earth orbit asteroids. So if you are and have a telescope or a good pair of binoculars and you see something funny over a number of evenings, contact or just Google the NASA-funded Catalina Sky Survey and you can get to do that. So first of all, you have to be a participant, you can create account on Zooniverse. So there's another thing too. We're sort of running out of time, so we can go into that again at some other stage.
Okay, thank you very much for that, John, and of course for your other news. Don't forget you can email us, astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. I was going to say our text is, but it's too late this evening. Thank you to Alan for his text. He said he would have baked a cake for us, but anyway, that's another story. You can beg him for John next week because he'll be here all on his Tobler.
No, I won't be.
I'll be here on my Tobler. What am I? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. For a minute there. Imagine if neither of us showed up. It'll be a few weeks' time you'll be here on your Tobler. Anyway, and thanks to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon and for the people here who put the show out as a podcast. But that's all from me, Ben Evans, for this edition. We're just trying to be show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Brenline and with Threads. 11 p.m., it's Nigel Wood with his World Music. called Ear to the Globe. And at midnight to 2 a.m. we have After Hours with Dave Barry and his mix of jazz, blues and soul. Please join me on my Toblerone next week at the same time. I'll be back with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of your children. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.